This is Wendy Perry. Welcome aboard, everyone.
Perhaps love is like a resting place, a shelter from the storm. It exists to give you comfort. It is there to keep you warm. And in those times of trouble, when you are most alone, the memory of love will bring you home.
This episode is dedicated to a survivor of sexual abuse, Maggie. She shares her story today of the abuse she suffered as a member of the church by her brother-in-law while living in his home. She reported the abuse to her bishop, but this was in the 70s and there really weren't any specific policies or training afforded the bishops at that time. But we also are reminded that we are still lacking in those areas, still today. So I think this is still apropos for us and important to keep pushing and paying attention to. The song I chose today is Perhaps Love by John Denver. One reason I associate John Denver with the 70s, and also because I wanted to dedicate the song not only to Maggie and other survivors of sexual abuse, but also to her son John, whom we lost in 2016. Perhaps it just wasn't enough love, but there was from his mom. She's an amazing, resilient, awesome person. She's an occupational therapist who works with babies. It doesn't get much better than that. Things she's had to overcome are incredible. And she told me she still holds no anger towards God. So here's to you, Maggie, your little sister, and to sweet John, forever in our hearts.
If I should live forever and all my dreams come true, my memories of love will be of you.
You have some interesting experiences to share with us about some very tender topics and topics that we have talked about on this program and has been a lot in the Mormon milieu, shall we say, the Me Too movement and sexual abuse and those kinds of things. And I think your story is not only interesting, but important. Important because it's unique and also because it is very universal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So where would you like to start? And I really appreciate you being vulnerable and willing to share.
Well, I think that when I first heard about the reports about abuse in the temple or at churches or church youth programs by adults, it didn't surprise me. I'm going, oh, well, that's not news.
Really?
You know?
Because that's pretty surprising to most.
Well, it's because I experienced that. And there are... I experienced it from, well, I'll get some details. There was sins of, what is it? The sins of commission.
Commission.
Commission. That's when people just don't do anything.
That's when they do something.
Or they do something. That omission. There were sins
of
omission.
To,
The people that were in authority should have taken action when asked.
Okay.
Even if they didn't see the things going on.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But to be fair, we're going to say this was in what decade?
70s.
So they didn't have the policies in place that they do have now.
No.
And they were, would you say, pretty clueless?
I think because we are a lay church, the person's background could be any type of education or understanding about what it means to have sexual abuse. They may have no knowledge of it. There's lots of people
right.
Who just don't think about it, hear about it, do anything about it. So you're put into a position of authority. You might not even know what you're looking for. You might even know what you just saw, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're told about it, you kind of fumble around and go, wow, what am I supposed to do about this? And you didn't even, I don't think they even knew who to go ask.
And there's that uncomfortableness. And here they are. In your experience, I think you were able to go.
I went to my bishop.
Your bishop.
Okay. But I need to give a little background about why all this came down. I grew up in a home, my mom was difficult, you know, she had mental illness and an addiction to alcohol and prescription drugs, so home wasn't a happy home. My dad died when I was 15. Mm-hmm. Now, at that occasion, because my mom wasn't so well, I had to go live with my older sister in Maryland, so I'm from Kentucky to Maryland.
Your mother just was not able to care for you?
No, even the judge... that gave my sister guardianship
okay.
of me and my little sister.
Okay.
You know, so...
And you were 15 and your sister was how old?
She was 18 months younger than I am.
Okay.
So we were the last of the kids. My older brother, one brother was in college, and the sister, of course, that's the oldest, that's who we went to live with in Maryland.
How old was she?
11 years older than I am.
So. Okay. So she was established enough to take over the mother role.
She was married.
She was married.
She was married. She had married a guy that had a child from a previous marriage and was fathering it. She had two children. I think she was pregnant with the third when daddy died, or something like that.
And are you comfortable saying the name of her husband, or can we just give him a name?
So
we can just give him a name. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. All right. So, you know, our Catholicism being, you know, really not much. So, Bill was a member of the LDS Church, and my older sister had met other Mormons when she was in college, and then she was going to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and he, at one of the single adult activities, she kind of went to it because she had dated a Mormon guy at another university, uh-huh. whatever, came across him, and he was basically looking for another wife because his wife had died, and he had a little three-year-old whatever.
Yeah.
And he was a brilliant man. I mean, he was very intelligent. I mean, like Mensa-type intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
But some things were missing, you know, as right and wrong, you know.
Okay.
Though all the exterior stuff was out there. And unfortunately for me, I've had more than one experience of that exterior stuff being there. And then I found out what the reality is. So my sister marries him. She joins the church. Never really very active. My dad dies. My little sister and I go to live with her. My brother, that's just a year and a half older than me, he was graduating senior high school. He just lived with a neighbor and finished high school and was on his own.
Okay.
And my other brother was in college, and he just ended up staying up near the university and living on his own. So we are all pretty much spread out.
Tough, man. That's
you know. So I'm in Maryland, and he sits us down one evening and says, you know, we want to have you have an opportunity to have some sort of religion in your life, and it's up to you what you want to do. Because we can take you to the Catholic Church, you know, if you want to go, or you can go with us to church, whatever. And so, initially, my little sister and I, we would go to the Catholic Church, usually the folk mass, because we didn't go in our blue jeans, and it was out on the lawn a lot of times in the summertime,
nice.
And there was guitars, and
yeah.
it was fun. It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
And we weren't real regular, but that's, you know, we did that. And so, you know, I'd say somewhere between November and May, no, Christmas, actually, May, the following year is when I was baptized, somewhere in that time period. He starts to talk about the gospel, the church, all this. And he is, at that time, he is a 70 in the church. Okay? At that time, in the 70s, a 70 was basically a ward missionary.
Right.
Okay? So he started teaching us, you know, the flip charts, the old style.
Right.
Film strips and stuff. And we're teenagers. We've left our childhood home, the only place we've lived before. We had nowhere else to go. This is where we were going to live and have a roof over our heads.
Yeah.
You know. And we're young and naive. I mean, honestly, you know, we came from a rural high school, graduating classes of 28. You know, something like that. It was crazy.
Wow, that is...
My dad was a doctor for the rural area.
Oh, wow.
He was a general practice
one.
Doctor. Went and did home, you know, house calls.
And here you are.
Yeah. No, that's all I do. He was a really wonderful guy.
Oh,
and,
so sorry.
You know, it was a big loss to the community and family. But anyway, I'm in Maryland. Gospel's being kind of taught at home. He's got this office that's down in the basement. My little sister and I, we're sleeping on a couch bed because there's no bedroom for us.
Oh,
and so we're sleeping on a couch bed. And this was until they could get a bigger house. But during this time being taught the missionary lessons, Bill would come in and talk to us in the early mornings while we were in the bed, in the couch bed. And then we got to where he'd come into bed with us. And then it got to be inappropriate.
Was he in between the two?
Yeah, would usually where it ended up, and then be an inappropriate touching. And
how old is Bill at this time? Approximately.
Like 30s? He's already been married, he had a child, he was
okay,
older.
So late 30s, you know, he's...
35, something, 37, something like that.
And you're 16 and 17 and 15 about?
Yeah, initially 15 and 13, you know, when we first got there.
Even before you got your license?
Yeah, this is before I got my driver's
license.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So this all started pretty soon after you moved in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty soon. And I did recall that there was one time when they were down to Kentucky and we had a big pool, above ground pool in our backyard. And I do remember a time when he was kind of inappropriately close to us in the pool, even before our daddy died.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
So, you know, there was little signals.
Slight grooming behavior.
Yeah. Now, I had been abused before in other situations before I even made it to Maryland. A couple of individual events. The big problem is one of them my dad knew, but nobody, I didn't know until like I was, I don't know, 30, 40 years old, that my dad had known about it. And he was ready to go kill the guy.
Oh, wow.
That touched me and my little sister.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the family kept him from doing that. That was a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't let me see his rage for me.
Oh.
Nobody sat down and talked to me.
No.
So as far as I was concerned, why tell anybody? No one's going to do anything anyway.
So it would have been actually very helpful for you to see his anger and know
right.
that you were loved about and cared about. And you had a
right.
you had a defender.
Yeah.
And sadly, your great defender, you lost at such a young age. So.
Yeah. So, so I didn't say anything. It got to the point where, in that house, in one of the houses, they had a dark room downstairs, and this is when I got involved with photography. So I was doing some black and white printing down there, and he came down there one time, and you know, literally had me like up against the wall, in the little area that I was using as a dark room, and I pushed him away. I says, "Don't touch me ever again." And at this point, I'd already joined the church. I'd been active in the church, you know, doing all the youth program things and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was at least a year or a year and a half of trying to avoid his actions toward me.
And this is before you could get out of the house with the car. And then also your sister was younger. She did not have access to a car.
No.
And one thing that, did you talk to your sister about it?
No.
And not uncommon, you know.
Well, I was
why
fearful.
Do you think that is?
Well, I was fearful that, she'd get mad at us as a kid.
Did you talk to your little sister?
No. No, we were just like, I think we each knew that we were both being affected, but it became separated. It became separate after we got...
So once there was a few incidents in this sofa bed where there was some touching, he was, I'm just going to say... clever enough to start separating you when the abuse was going on.
Yeah.
And you could only assume what was happening to her, but you didn't know directly.
Not at that time.
At that time. Okay.
Okay. I found out years and years later, and this makes a lot of sense to me. My little sister has had a very difficult life.
Yeah.
She struggles to take care of herself and to be what she needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But she told me that on the... night before we got baptized, and he raped her.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I was in the ward over in Rockville. Oh, and this was the other interesting thing is because you know how when you change wards or you move, you have to change wards.
Just to back up, what do you think that does to you psychologically to have this religious experience so closely tied to something so... violating and horrific and traumatizing, this rape, and then to have it all, I don't know how you don't connect that. You're going to the baptism the next day. He's the guy that's taught you the gospel.
Yeah, I messed up my little sister.
Yeah.
I totally messed her up. I mean, she was never really active after that. I mean, she kind of showed up to some of the new things. Now, as far as, you got very close to that with me, but I somehow had it in me to I started locking the door.
You're older. You had had some experience before.
I was gone. I was gone as much as I could.
Yeah.
You know, I would work. I'd be at church activities. I'd be at friends' houses. I made myself scarce. Okay. You know, and the unfortunate thing, I couldn't stay away all the time. You know. But he did begin, you know, he did leave me alone. But the problem is knowing that and getting in the church and my belief at the church at that time was, because he was using, you know, they don't use this anymore, the little booklet called The Trial of the Stick of Joseph.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. All this, you know, ancient ruins stuff, all this stuff coming up, oh, that makes so much sense. And it says this in the Book of Mormon and that.
Yeah.
And
this. It all matches
and
up.
So right? Now I hadn't completely read the Book of Mormon, but I felt like, okay, well, this all makes sense. Oh, this is great. Oh, we need this in our lives. You know, and I'm a teen, you know, and I'm groping to have a community.
Absolutely.
You know.
There'd be no reason not.
And, you know, I've moved to a new area. And my friends, who are LDS friends at that time, were amazing. Because when I went to the high school the first time, they had known me because they had met me during the summer. Well, anyway, when I went to the school, there was this table in the library where all the LDS kids would get around before the bell rang. You'd have to go to homeroom.
Yeah, they're in between seminary.
You know? And so they're all hanging out there. And they invite me over. And they all start to involve me in being whatever they're doing and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and they were great, great supportive friends. And so, you know, there were a couple of friends that knew my background when I came from in Kentucky. I did not tell my friends at that time what was going on in Maryland. Mm-hmm. Now I've got some girlfriends that know now what went on in Maryland, you know. But I didn't really deal with this. You know, I kept it separated. I said, okay, the church is true. Yep, we're going to go for this. Well, that happened. He's leaving me alone now. I'm just going to throw myself into serving the church, you know, getting my education finished, that kind of thing.
Did you think he's a bad egg in a good group, or?
Oh, I had convinced myself that, well, at least he taught me the gospel.
You know? I can be grateful to Bill because he brought me the gospel, and it hasn't been all so pleasant, but...
Yeah, he brought me the gospel. You know, I mean, it would have been better under different conditions, yes.
It doesn't sound like there was a lot of self-blame, but was there... Did you feel responsible at all, or your wife?
No, I felt damaged.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever felt responsible. You know, I didn't really start dealing with it until I was like in my late 20s, 28... to early 30s in that area, start realizing what the impact of my childhood and that time period had on me.
Right.
And how it was affecting how I was being a mother, how I saw the world, the whole bit.
Right.
So, you know, keeping myself scarce. So it was like in the senior year of high school. And I go, this is going on. This is involving my little sister now. My sister is so messed up. She's sort of going to school, isn't she? Didn't get her GED. She ends up moving out of the house, and Bill ends up leaving my sister, my older sister, and moving in with my little sister in an apartment.
Okay, so Bill leaves your older sister, his wife, and the mother of his three children?
Yes. Well, actually, four.
Four kids by this time?
Yeah.
And moves in with your younger sister... We'll call her Betty.
Yeah.
So he moves in with her younger sister, who he had been abusing, and the night before the baptism he had raped. You found out later.
Yes.
Okay. But when she, at this time, when she moved in with him to be his
she thought this was who she was supposed to be with.
So she thought
she turned this whole thing into a
love. She turned it into a love thing. Okay. Yeah. And probably he was... We can imagine he was telling her something that made her believe that.
Yeah.
That.
And she was very enmeshed with him for like 10 plus years. Yeah, there's a whole other story behind
that. And is he still in the church?
He's passed.
I mean, was he in the church at the time he was with Betsy and Betty?
Yes, and he eventually got excommunicated at some point. But it was way after he was done with me and my little sister.
Okay.
It was related to other things that he got involved in.
Like okay.
Child pornography. And
okay, so eventually he got his comeuppance in some ways.
Yes, but he did have a deathbed repentance and was rebaptized.
Oh, okay.
Well, now,
okay.
I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Can't worry about it.
I love my nephews and niece.
Right, right.
So, you know, like I said, it was my senior year, and I had had enough of this, and I what was going on. So I went in to the bishop, and I said, hey, you know, this is going on. What are we supposed to do?
This is after Bill and Betty got together?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
Not yet.
Just so this is when you're...
We're still living in the
he's
house.
He's trying to corner you. You're trying to avoid him.
Right. We're still living in the house. This is the second house.
You didn't know about the rape, but you were at some level aware that he was...
Well, eventually you started seeing the...
Abusing your sister.
I would come home from school, and this is back when people had answering machines in the house.
Uh-huh.
And I would check the answering machine, and there'd be messages on there for swinging groups, meet up with swinging groups.
Oh.
And there's also pornography in the home, and which, not just picture books, but video. And I knew that he was showing those to my little sister.
Oh, well. Okay, yeah. So you knew there was this abuse going on.
Yeah,
I mean, that's abuse right there.
Yeah,
so.
And
okay.
I, you know, again, I was trying to survive myself. So...
So you said, I need help, I need to talk to someone.
Right.
And I believe the bishop has...
yeah, he's supposed to have some authority.
Judge in Israel, authority, and
right.
The gift of discernment, I assume.
Right. Right. Yeah. And basically what I got was, well, what do you want to do? You know, I mean, like I'm in my senior year of high school. What do I want to do?
Well, so you told him this about yourself and your sister.
Yes, and I go, I want this to stop. I mean, I want something to do something.
You told him. Yeah. You told him in some detail. Let's say it took you 10 minutes or so to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, and you go in super detail.
I'm
16, 17
right,
years old.
Right,
and, you know, go, that's embarrassing. You're talking to a man who's basically a stranger.
Right.
To you, you know.
But you got the story out,
yeah.
And then your bishop, and we'll just say he is a high-ranking official in the church now.
Yes, he is.
This day. And are you comfortable saying who it is, or?
I will say who it is, but I just want people to take into consideration what time period this was.
Right.
It's the 1970s.
Exactly.
No church rules were guidebooks were given for this stuff.
Okay.
So.
We're going to be as kind to him as we can, but what can you tell us who it is?
D. Todd Christofferson.
Okay, so your bishop was D. Todd Christofferson, but like you say, at the time, there weren't any guidelines. The policies weren't in place to tell them to call a phone number, or
right.
We really didn't have, even have LDS Family Services much that I know of. Maybe there was an adoption service.
Yeah.
So it's not real surprising that he didn't really know what to do because he had no training.
Right.
There was probably no guidelines in his handbook as far as a bishop. So the best he knew to do was say, what do you want to do about it?
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is not, I mean, I can well, maybe understand, well, you know,
yeah,
do you want me to call the police? Because, like, maybe you wouldn't want him to call the police, or maybe you wouldn't want him to do anything. So,
you know, he did kind of suggest, would you like to live with somebody else? Now, I'm so close to graduating from high school, and I didn't want to change schools because I'm going somewhere here or there. I did have, in the previous ward, a young woman's leader that was very close to me. We became very good friends with her, and I've just reconnected with her, actually, after about 15, 20 years.
Okay.
If I would have had a choice to move out, I would have gone to her house and been in another ward.
Right.
The old ward. But I just, the whole idea, it was so traumatic moving from Kentucky to Maryland, and I was so close to graduating. So basically, I said, I will stay there, I will lock my bedroom door, and I will wait it out. Till I can get out of the house. So
okay.
After I graduated high school, I went and I was in the Hillcomore pageant that summer.
Okay.
Got an opportunity to do that. After that, loaded up my car with one of my girlfriends, left and never came back.
Right.
Okay. Now my little sister was still there. But then by the time I was, you know, going or dealing with all that stuff, she moved in with him and that kind of stuff.
You really had no ability to help her at this point.
No.
I mean, what were you going to do?
I had no income. I had nothing, you know.
Right.
You know.
You wouldn't have been able to convince her of anything.
Yeah.
Most likely, anyway.
So, I,
He was, what we sometimes call like a Svengali. Like, he could convince you of things, or like kind of the charm of the Selmos of sociopath.
Oh yeah, he would try hypnosis with us.
Oh, okay.
Things like that. He was involved in with some a prominent psychic at the time.
Oh, okay.
I'll say his name because he's not.
Yeah.
For real, Uri Geller.
He was involved with Uri Geller?
Yes.
Okay.
And I can't remember the guy that was always against him. I can't think of his name right now. But, you know, my little...
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
My little sister got involved with him and that and all those kind of things. And I mean, it was years and years of stuff that she went through.
My gosh. Wow.
And, you know, I mean, she's made some other poor decisions on her own, but I'm saying the foundation was laid for her to make poor decisions.
Right.
And then on top of that, family history of mental illness and et cetera, et cetera. I mean...
Did she have children with Bill?
No.
Okay.
No, she's never had children.
Okay.
And I'm glad she hasn't. I don't think she's ever really wanted children, to tell you the truth, but we've never really honestly had that conversation. She likes her cats.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say? She likes her
cats. Did she... She never married Bill? Or did she?
Mm. Yeah, they were... Married apparently in Mexico, but I don't know if it was valid.
Okay.
And then I heard something that was annulled, and then she married Uri Geller's brother so he could get his green card. He came in from Israel.
Okay.
And then I want to
say... The plot thickens. Okay. Uri Geller's. Okay.
And then she did finally find someone to marry about 10 years ago and was married for about 4 or 5 years and has been divorced.
Yeah. Now. It's rough going, yeah.
Yeah. And that was the first... basically decent guy that she had married, but I don't know. I hear her side of the story. I don't hear his side of the story of why she divorced him.
Okay.
You know, but the whole thing had a big impact on how I perceived men.
Well, could I ask you, was there any church discipline?
Not at
was
my,
he called?
No, not did, during my time. No.
Bishop Christofferson call in your brother? Or?
Not that I know of. Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
He continued in his callings?
Oh, yeah. And, you know...
How did that make you feel?
I guess ignored it. I just ignored it. Yeah, I figured pretty much it's out of my hands. What am I supposed to do about it?
You just kind of like... You kept it up into your head, like, par for the course. It's a man's world, or... I mean, didn't you think he should have been... Were you expecting any?
Well, I wasn't smart enough to know what the church system really was supposed to do.
Right, yeah. I mean, you hadn't been a member that long. You didn't really know, okay, hey.
I've been a member like maybe almost 2 years.
Okay.
You know.
So you wouldn't have had a huge expectation, okay, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be a high council court, and you wouldn't even have known probably what that was.
But
looking back on it.
Well, looking back on it, it would have been great if I'd had that knowledge. I probably would have been a little bit more assertive.
Looking back on it now, do you have any shoulds? Like, boy, he should have. He
should have been in jail. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. He should have been in jail, and we should have been taken out of the home.
Should have been in jail.
I feel bad for my older sister.
Oh, yeah. Because, oh, my goodness.
You know, he was messing with her mind, too.
Oh,
and
I'm
I don't
sure.
know how much she knew about what was going on with us. After Bill got involved with my little sister and moved out with her, I mean, obviously she knew.
Yeah, at some point,
it
becomes pretty clear.
It's very clear.
And she's smart enough to realize, okay, something's been going on for a while.
Yeah, and quite a decade or more ago, I wrote my sister a letter, told her how much I appreciate her. I don't know how you can put, it was better to go into that situation than to stay in Kentucky and be under the guardianship of my mother. So
right.
So I'm comparing, you know, one evil to another evil.
Right.
So okay. At least, you know, in Maryland, I could get in my car, go somewhere, do what I wanted to do. I could lock my door.
Right.
You know, man, I don't know what it would have been like. I don't know what it would have been like to live with my mother. It would have been really. And then, you know, this all had a huge impact on my marriage, relationship there. My past husband said that, you know, the reason our marriage failed was because I was so damaged from all the stuff that went on in my life. And then, of course, he also imitated the behavior of Bill's behavior in the sense that, you know, pornography, serving in church callings when you're not worthy to do so.
Right.
Being a temple worker and that kind of stuff, you know.
And not feeling a compunction to go confess? And,
oh, well.
Or yeah, just cycle around?
And he had an affair, and we did the church court thing, and he was disfellowshipped at one point. But it wasn't severe.
But kind of a sexual, maybe sexual addiction.
Kind of and I don't know where that's at today. I can just say even after the court actions and then him having his blessings written and stated, it didn't fix things.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's that expectation.
Later, I mean, we were married for 25 years. So it was after the first 8 years the affair occurred. And so within the years 20 through 25, he started repeating those behaviors. And I always told him that if you start repeating anything, you know, the kind of behaviors that led up to the affair, that I was going to leave you. People will sometimes think that if you say a prayer and you've got enough faith and you go and take the sacrament on Sunday, then, wow, I've done it. Okay, I'm good if I can behave myself for this week. Sacrament again, okay, then I'm good. I can go ahead and go on the next week. It's like that. This is where I started having a real problem. One of the reasons I left Catholicism was because I did not believe that a Catholic priest could give me absolution for my sins.
Right.
I said the only one that could do that would be God.
Right.
And that was a major issue for me. So then when I started seeing that what the sacrament meant to people, how it was used to kind of like wash them clean, you know, five Hail Marys or take the sacrament, whatever.
But you are supposed to co-confess.
You know?
Those kinds of sins.
You know, I mean, it's a matter of, well, how bad do I have to be to make it that I should go confess? What degree of sin equals, ooh, I've done it way too far, now it's time to go and see the bishop. I think people have an unclear perspective of that. And a lot of it's done due to their own personal saving grace. You know, take care of me. I don't want to do that. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, then there's a... You're going public.
And then you're found out.
Yeah. The irony is that people that confess, then it becomes known, and the ones that don't confess go on their merry way, and there's unfairness in that whole system. But the people that confess at BYU that they broke the honor code, they're kicked out. And in the meantime, the ones that are doing the same behavior but don't confess... stay in BYU. So how does that work?
I don't know if it was how recent it was, that young man. I think every religion has their, you know, guidelines, and then people kind of create their own version of those guidelines. And it's self-preservation.
Absolutely. Well, we have defense mechanisms for a darn good reason.
despite the fact all that happened, I learned a lot about charity from the church, service, what good friends mean. You know, I had safe spaces to go to.
Yes.
You know, and that was good.
Yeah.
You know, and things could always have been better. And I've known people in much worse circumstances. And, you know, how can I say? I couldn't count my blessings, honestly. It's sad, but it's all a matter of degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got, I don't know, I mean, the glass castle, like you mentioned, that's a whole nother level of a sociological paradigm that you kind of go, oh my gosh, that blew my mind. There's another one out called Educated. I don't know if you read it, but it is about a family up in, I want to say, Idaho.
Yes.
And they're LDS.
Yeah.
And
it's an amazing story.
How Orthodoxy can cause a great deal of harm.
Right.
And things taken out of context in any religion can cause a great deal of harm.
Right. But despite all these experiences, you went ahead and you got married in the temple?
Yep.
And you were devout and...
Wholeheartedly believed in that temple covenants.
Yeah.
And then my husband had the affair.
Yeah.
And then I intermittently would go to the temple, then I would slack off for years, then I would get it back, all the encouragement of my friends and all that kind of stuff. And
if you just do that, such and such. And
well, you know, I hadn't done anything that would keep me from going to the temple. Right. I just quit going because I felt like, this is not what happened in my life, you know. And the hardest thing was, is one time I was in the temple where I was in the group, and then he was one of the people up in the front, one of the officiators. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, what in the world is going on here? You know, this doesn't fit. And I don't know, in the last decade, I've just been going
because you knew that he had a different...
Yeah.
A dual existence back home.
Yeah. And I just go, well, I'm getting to the point where my inside has to match my outside or vice versa. I can't put on the pretend face anymore.
Right.
And go to church and say, I believe this or that. I mean, I couldn't bear my testimony because I didn't believe it. I did visiting and teaching because I cared about people.
Right.
And I never gave a message. You know, I mean, we're talking about the last 10 years.
Would you say it almost... Being inauthentic almost becomes painful.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's hard to describe that.
I mean, ripping. You kind of go and you sit there and you feel like there's this turmoil rolling around inside.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, my gosh. Oh, that's interesting.
Your heart rate goes up.
And you
your
go,
breathing gets more
and
rapid and shallow.
And that's why, you know, I mean, I said to you before we started this discussion that I've listened to your podcasts. And I'm not angry at you. I'm just angry at what I'm hearing often.
Yeah.
And
I'm just the messenger, right?
You know, I'm not going to shoot the messenger or any of the other people that do their thing on this in this group.
Yeah.
It makes me go, why was I so gullible? Why couldn't I figure out sooner? I think it would have helped my children a whole lot better. I should have gotten divorced when he had that affair, and I should have raised my children on my own. But I had no education at that time. I had 1 year of college.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I had had 3 babies, and, you know, just like you were supposed to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, I...
And to be clear, this woman sitting in front of me is one of the sharpest... strongest, most resilient. I think you can hear that. Went on to get a master's degree.
I know. Actually,
what do you have?
My degree, we were the last class that was allowed to get a bachelor's degree for becoming occupational therapist.
Occupational therapist. Okay.
We're the last class. Now everybody else has to go through and get their master's.
Okay.
I think
good.
It's moving on the doctorate, you know, now. But I've been practicing for over 18 years now, and I love it. I love working with the kids. It's just, it's so fulfilling. And
you don't work. You don't work with just anybody.
No, I'm actually right now, I'm working with the little babies. I get to work with the little ones that are coming right out of children's hospital.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, my oldest child, well, I have a 6-year-old, but most of my kids are birth to 3.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've got some that I can hold my 2 hands in the palms of my 2 hands.
And Maggie knows that because I had a child who with a brain hemorrhage at 3 weeks, I hold therapists... speech therapists, occupational therapists who work with these kids in high regard. So we have a connection there.
Yeah. Yeah, I love doing what I do. It's a great job. Yeah. You know, it wears me out, but I'm hoping I can.
Yes.
I hope I can keep doing it until I can retire. You
yeah.
Know? So.
Well, I'm going to just put you right up to the top of heaven just for that.
Okay, well, we were talking about heaven and hell earlier.
Yes, we were.
And I, you know, being a Catholic and being a... Mormon.
A very lapsed Catholic.
You know, yeah, lapsed Catholic and non-participating or Mormon. Now, as far as heaven or hell, I don't know which bus to get on. You know, who's driving it, which religion, and where is it going?
There's a cartoon. Like,
yeah.
Catholic hell or Mormon hell? Yeah, I've been doing a lot of studying on this recently. I think... Wow. I don't want to go to the hell where they cut your genitals off or whatever. So maybe Catholic?
Millions of children. I'm not going to do that. Well, you know, one of the main reasons I did join the church is because of the doctrine of families can be together forever.
Oh, yeah.
And my daddy had just died.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And I'm going, I can be with daddy. I can be with daddy. And then later on I found out, no, there's conditions attached to this. I believe it's important to have some sort of spirituality in your life. I mean, I don't know what my spirituality is going to be. I don't know. I'm willing to listen to anything from any source.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, I'm open to anything that can give me some sort of healthy perspective of the world. not just make me feel better, but make me be able to love others more.
Right.
You know, all diversity.
Right.
You know,
right.
And my son John was gay. I have a brother that's gay. This did start to cause some problems, you know.
Yeah.
Not my brother, but my son.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think the church's stance on homosexuality affected him?
Well,
did he,
you know,
like,
he was so far gone by the time the church really started making real statements about it, that it didn't bother him. He actually had his name removed from records of the church.
But as a kid, was he aware at all that you weren't supposed to be gay?
No, but he acted out in so many other ways that it wasn't clear that he was gay to others.
But to himself. Was there any sense that he had shame or anything?
I didn't have that conversation with him.
Okay.
He knew that later on that I accepted him for him no matter what. Yeah. But
did his dad? Or did he ever even?
His dad loved him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't know how to relate to him.
Right.
You know.
He loved him the best he knew how and related to him the best that he could, you felt.
There's a lot of people around that I feel like, because they can't relate, they're so afraid to interact with people who are different. And it doesn't have to be your sexual choices or anything. It can be anything different.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah. It's almost like
race,
the different people are walking beside you covered in ash. And if you get any bit close and it gets on you, then, oh my gosh, what am I going to do about that? I'm infected. You know? I don't know. I think you should just put your arms around him and get yourself covered in ash.
Yeah.
You know? Because it washes off and you're together.
And you're just imagining the ash anyway, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you might end up just ash.
Maybe it's just a beautiful rainbow of that Indian's powder they put on everyone.
Yeah, some of that stuff is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, overall, you know, they say you're supposed to learn from life experiences. I've learned a lot.
You have learned a lot.
Learned a lot.
And you have a beautiful heart. You know that. I think that about you. We created some good stuff in our days.
Yeah,
we had that cool little group, right?
Yeah, that was on fire.
That was awesome. That was pretty awesome.
Well, we talked for so long, we forgot to really do an outro together. But I just want to tell Maggie how much I appreciate all the time she spent with me and her sharing with us. This has been the Mormon Wellness Project. I'm your host, Wendy Perry, and I hope you join me again next time. Don't forget to go to the website and click that donate button. We really appreciate your help. Give us 5-star ratings on iTunes. And don't forget to set up your Smile Amazon account to Mormon Discussion, Inc. And make sure that we get just a little help from that as well. See you next time. Happy trails, everyone.
It is there to keep you warm, and in those times of trouble when you are most alone, the memory of love will bring you home. Perhaps love is like a window, perhaps an open door. It invites you to come closer, it wants to show you more. Even if you lose yourself and don't know what to do, the memory of love will see you through. Oh, love to some is like a cloud, to some as strong as steel. For some a way of living, for some a way to feel. And some say love is holding on, and some say letting go. And some say love is everything, and some say they don't know. Perhaps love is like the ocean, full of conflict, full of change. Like a fire when it's cold outside, or thunder when it rains. If I should live forever and all my dreams come true, my memories of love will be of you.